What is your go-to at Starbucks? What's your order?
I get a short whatever was brewed most recently. Like black coffee, okay, but like their tiny bodega size. Like once I learned that there was this tiny bodega size cup of coffee, and it used to be like just $2, and it was that much better than a bodega cup of coffee. I felt like I was supporting a company that was supporting the right issues, you know, LGBTQ veterans, that they were taking stands on racial issues and discrimination. I feel good about giving Starbucks my money. So
yeah, healthcare for their employees, like free college classes or subsidized college classes. Yeah, they've done some good stuff.
Which brings us to Howard fucking Schultz.
Ta-da, here's where we are.
Did you miss us? It's To Buy or Boycott, and I'm Allison.
And I'm Bridget. This week, we're talking about third-party candidates. Are they a refreshing independent voice or foolish candidates who lure voters to waste their votes? Let's talk about it.
As always, we're here to help you sort through the advertising noise, consume media and products with conviction, so your dollars support companies that align with your values. It can be that simple. Join us on Twitter at @ToBuyOrBoycott or email us your suggestions at ToBuyOrBoycott@gmail.com.
This week, we asked our followers on Twitter how they felt about third-party candidates. 71% were opposed and 29% were in favor.
You know, after 2016, I can see how people are weary of third-party candidates. I mean, we had more than, you know, we had a couple that dominated the conversation down to the general election. But as I was watching Michael Cohen's testimony today and saw him proudly affirm his Democratic allegiance, it's like, I was a Democrat until Steve Wynn called me and said that I couldn't work for Trump if I wasn't a Republican. So then I became finance committee chair at the RNC. Like, okay. But I was still a Democrat. So like, I acknowledge that the two-party system leaves a lot to be desired as we look to 2020. At the same time that people are desperate for a solution to beat Trump, they're more likely to try out a silver bullet candidate.
Let's start this conversation off by just talking about the history of third-party candidates. So since 1920, only three third-party candidates, La Follette in 1924, Strom Thurmond in 1948, and George Wallace in 1967, have been able to win even a single electoral vote. But that doesn't mean that third-party candidates haven't altered the outcomes of presidential elections over the course of American history.
Any conversation that hinges on a racist of historic renown like Strom Thurmond is a sign that this is a losing battle. I'm already calling boycott, but continue, educate us.
So more recently, there were the more eccentric that didn't win any official votes. So in 1992, Texas billionaire Ross Perot ran as an independent and ruined Bush Sr.'s chances at a second term, and arguably handed the election to Bill Clinton. In 2000, the election between George W. and Al Gore was decided by only a couple hundred votes in Florida. And even if a small portion of the 22,000 votes won by Nader in New Hampshire had flipped to Gore, that would have ensured Gore's victory. We wouldn't have had all of that nonsense with the hanging chads and the recounts and the Supreme Court decision in Florida if it just hadn't been for Nader. Even the most recent and perhaps most painful example is 2016, where Gary Johnson, Jill Stein, and even Evan McMillan collectively siphoned off 6.7 million votes, aiding Trump's victory. In Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin, Stein's vote total exceeded Trump's margin of victory, and anyone who would vote for Stein definitely would not have voted for Trump.
I think that there is value in these non-traditional and new voices being part of the highest level, you know, essentially strategy debates for our nation. But I will quote a warning by my favorite potential third-party candidate, Mike Bloomberg, that given the strong pull of partisanship and the realities of the Electoral College system, there's just no way an independent can win. That is truer today than ever before. However, in the past, and even in the more recent election, the values that the third-party candidates stood for did become part of the broader conversation.
Totally. Yeah, but third-party candidates should run under the umbrella of the party that most closely aligns with their views and make eliminating the fundamental structures put in place by the founders that virtually guarantee a two-party system their primary campaign promise. anything else is ignorant and only will help the party that is least aligned with their views.
Which brings us to Howard fucking Schultz, the muse for this week's episode.
Oh my gosh.
The thorn in my side.
So did you watch the town hall on CNN?
Let's be honest, no one did. Honestly, nobody watched it. It had abysmal ratings. It's people aren't even curious to hear what he says because he just makes mistake after mistake when speaking to the press for somebody who should be so well media trained as a CEO, but I digress. It's like the markets, the audience, everyone has spoken that we are not interested in a Schultz 2020. It's just not the time. I admit that there's been rumors that he was interested in public office for a long time. Pour Your Heart Out, his memoir, his business memoir, very much positions him as a man of the people, really goes into his, you know, stories growing up. I believe that it was in the Bronx, but maybe it was in Brooklyn, but in, you know, a housing project, and his, you know, very diverse childhood by all accounts of his. And I really liked him. I was into the idea that one day he would run for president. But it's a great story, but right now is not the time. And it showed he's not very politically inclined. The fact that he thought that the most contentious election of our entire lifetimes was going to be the time for a political maverick like him to come in when we just voted for a political maverick who proved that just because you have business experience and tons of money doesn't make you qualified to be a politician. But I will say that despite being a fan of his book and it being a great story, I commented at the time to my boss, who actually recommended that I read it, that I thought that there were moments in his career that he glossed over, that he seemingly catapulted to, like, I was a regional salesperson to all of a sudden I was the president of the sales company and I was making millions of dollars a year, but I was unsatisfied. And those seemed like moments where he was solely in those positions because he was a straight white man. But this was never going to be his cycle, regardless of whether he was a privileged person or not. So pissed off anyone like me who thought that one day he would be an answer, but has now disqualified himself.
Totally. It's interesting that the early polling, he has incredible name brand recognition. People know who he is, but approval rating and whether people see him favorably as a presidential candidate is terribly, terribly low. And he knew this before he put together I think it's just an exploratory committee at this point, but before he announced his candidacy, before he started all of this, he knew that. And so to me, that is the unforgivable thing.
It's hubris.
If your goal, as he has stated, is he doesn't want Trump to win and he wants to break down some of the partisanship, jumping in if you know that that's the polling just feels really silly. So I didn't watch the CNN town hall, but you know, through my insane diet of political podcasts, news, and Twitter, all the highlights that I needed to hear, like him refusing to commit to divest from Starbucks, as if we need another rich white guy who's going to be potentially compromised or be at least accused of being compromised between the decisions that he makes potentially in the White House and his business decisions. And to your point, like he might have grown, I didn't read his book, and he might have grown up from a diverse background, but you know, him saying, I don't see race, like, oh, please, that is the most eye-rolly line. And the fact that you don't hear that you don't know, that you don't have advisors around you that say, for fuck's sake, don't say that.
CEO of a company as diverse as Starbucks, who has really historically been on the right side of this issue time and time again, he was playing to the Trump supporters that he thought that financially, you know, that we're going to see a little bit of what they saw in Trump in him, and that he was like a little bit smarter and slightly more moderate on social issues. But that was such a train wreck moment that exploded on Black Twitter, especially because he so deftly handled those race conversations in the past that actually brought him more brand love from a diverse consumer, almost than your average white consumer who is that considered to be that Trump voter. So why not take credit for closing the stores for a day to have those head-on conversations about race and tolerance in the workplace, which you were chided for in the moment, but have proven to be so prescient now because everybody is saying that that's how you're going to deal with, you know, problems about diversity is you have to talk about it. So it's that kind of direct acknowledgement of the problem that excites diverse voters and is endearing to us diverse customers. And then, and speaking frankly, as a company after racially charged events, it was just such a miss. It was just such a calculated miss too. Like, you had to know that that was going to come up.
Yeah, but it's like all the missed opportunities for him to offer on any policy platforms. Here he is on CNN. He's just announced his candidacy, and he offered no specifics on things like tax reform, other than just criticizing the liberal tax proposal. He criticized Medicare for All and then admitted that he had no plan to fix healthcare.
Does he have a plan for anything? He doesn't even really seem to have a plan to run for president at this point, except for like hire the most famous conservative advisor, hire an Obama era, like progressive advisor, and then say that that's a team. You know, he was just demonizing the extremes on both sides. And it sometimes felt that he was focused a little bit too much on the left and AOC.
Totally. And in later statements, he even said that he wouldn't run if Democrats nominated a centrist. He's admitting to holding the Democratic Party hostage if he doesn't get his way. Let the voters decide. Run as a Democrat, see how your centrist ideas stack up. But instead, he's using his power and money to circumvent the system and potentially screw over the majority of Americans who didn't vote for Trump in 2018 and who don't want him to be reelected in 2020.
And let's make sure that we're using centrist in, you know, air quotes right now, because that's debatable.
Completely. You know, he claims his goals are that he wants to change the two-party system and prevent Trump from being reelected. But by running as an independent, he guarantees that he will fail at both of those goals. Guarantees. Running as a Democrat is the only way that he has the possibility of achieving either of those goals.
You know, he's going all in on this party or a coalition of people who I believe, and pundits are increasingly saying, don't exist. These centrists, these elite coastal centrists that he's talking about are not going to carry the election. I mean, you and I could easily be lumped into this group of whom he thinks is his potential voters. But luckily in this case, people don't vote for their interests solely. And so it's like, the people that he thinks are going to fall in line and be so happy that they have this middle, again, air quotes, middle of the road option, don't realize that people care about the big promises, the big strategic issues facing the country, and, you know, just making sure that things remain status quo to billionaires and that we maybe fund early childhood education. That's not enough. We need bolder, bigger, and I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt on early childhood. That just sounds like something he's going to take a stand on. I don't even know his views on that.
There are a lot of people who sit out elections, but it's because they're uninspired. And I don't think that Howard Schultz is saying anything that is inspiring. Attacking the left, attacking the right, and offering no policies is not inspiring to someone who feels like politics is everybody is just equally bad. Everybody is paying lip service to the voters and then doing nothing, or everyone is just attacking people. He is just playing into that, which isn't inspiring. You know, you want to get inspiring. Look at what Beto is doing. Like, Beto is laying it all out there. He doesn't agree with everyone, but at least he is standing for something and it's inspiring. That is actually the type of candidate that's going to find people who are right now opting out of the system. What Howard Schultz is doing is just business as usual. I'm so over it. Did you happen to see the analysis that the Bennison Strategy Group did about Howard Schultz's chances?
No, but I can already imagine that they're slim.
So let me just tell you. So I think this was released just as an exclusive for Crooked Media. We'll add a link to this in the show notes. So they gave Howard Schultz kind of the most generous circumstances, where states like Texas are considered toss-ups. And the analysis shows that in a three-person race, as an independent candidate, he has no viable path to 270 electoral votes, which is the minimum required to win the presidency. Realistically, an independent candidate can only help one majority party candidate or the other reach 270 electoral votes, or it can throw the outcome of the election to the House of Representatives. In either scenario, in a close race, Schultz would help re-elect President Trump.
And Bloomberg did this research with political experience both in 2016 and now, and that's why we're not having a Bloomberg 2020 bid, even though he clearly has a vision, has the background, and I'm not, you know, totally buy on a Bloomberg third-party candidacy, but I'm not a total boycott like I have been historically for other people. But I just feel like we've already answered the question about whether being a billionaire and a successful business owner automatically qualifies you to be president, lead, and represent all of those in the nation. It doesn't. So we've proven this point out. We've learned something from it. And Howard Schultz is just, he's old news.
If the only thing that you have to say is, I'm a billionaire and I think that the system is broken, that's not, it's not enough. It's absolutely not enough. So one of the fundamental arguments about all third party candidates is this idea that like the two party system is broken. Do we believe that it's broken? And if so, how can we fix it?
That is a weighty question. Obviously. To me, what seems just the easiest step naively is to streamline, have every vote count equally as the ultimate statement of equality. Ultimately, though, I think that there are more than two ways to lead, and likely we will see a viable third party candidate establish themselves in the next few cycles. It's not something we're going to leave in 2016. It's going to keep following us. And I think that with each cycle, they will become more of a force to reckon with, but this is not that cycle.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think I'm not really convinced that the two-party system is broken. Politics as a whole is broken, and I think a lot of people are putting eggs in the basket of third-party candidates. But I would really love to hear a robust conversation about eliminating gerrymandering, making DC and Puerto Rico states, voter suppression, and campaign finance, all of which weakens the strength of a two-party system and creates no incentives for members from opposing parties to compromise. The Republicans have managed to develop a very successful strategy that enables them to rule by minority. In the 2018 midterm elections, Democrats lost 2 Senate seats, but there were 18 million more votes for Democrats than Republicans. That's crazy. We all know that Hillary won 3 million more votes than Trump, but look who's in the White House.
Maybe we just need a total rebrand for each party, and then we all have to reassess based on the issues rather than iconography and team player mentality. Like, what if you just got to the election ballot, or like you got your polling place in 2020 and there were two people and they listed out what their issues were and they had no party affiliation? It was like purple v yellow and nobody had any idea what it meant. That might be the only solution.
That's a great point. I mean, when people are polled on issues individually, they're not told which party. You know, this is the famous example with Obamacare. When you poll people about the core issues, people love them, Republicans, Democrats. But then when you remind them that this is what Obamacare is, they're like, oh no. Well, depending on which party, either they're like, yep, I knew I was for it, I'm all about it. Or they're like, no, that's socialism. So, you know, I think that's right. And I just hope that's the future. I hope that young people who are valuing and pushing for transparency in the thing, you know, what this whole podcast is about, the things that you buy, you want to know what you're supporting, who is the founder of this company, where is the product being made? You want your tech companies to have clearer terms of service, because if this product is free, what data are you selling? How do I have control over that data? Like, there is a push, and that part is inspiring. Politics is lagging behind as it always does, and as maybe it should, because you don't want a system that is blowing in the wind. But it does feel like politics is lagging way, way, way too far behind. And I think, you know, fresh voices like AOC, like her or not, are hopefully infusing a little bit more of the let's be real here and let's not just
spit hot fire, Bridget. Spit hot fire. You fire done, man. Okay, so what's your final verdict?
Boycott. Surprise, surprise. I am a hard boycott on this. I think the system can be fixed. I'm excited about the ways that we can fix the system, but boycott, get behind whatever candidate is going to beat Trump. And it's going to be whatever Democratic candidate is going to beat Trump, get behind them soon.
Soon is a daunting task, but I would definitely boycott third-party candidates and don't absolve them for leading us to where we are today. But I am still shopping on whether the current two-party system is representative of the diverse voices and ways to build the future. And just to further nuance my boycott, I am still a buy on Starbucks. I know I said I wasn't going to bring it there, but I just want to make sure that I separate the conversation from Howard Schultz to the fact that I think that Starbucks is like a truly conscionable or like conscious company.
Tune in next week for a conversation about newsletters, things like The Skim or political ones like The Politico and Axios. Which one of those do you love and which ones have you unsubscribed from? Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at To Buy or Boycott.
And email us your suggestions on topics and your feedback at tobuyorboycott@gmail.com. Join the conversation.
Bye.
Or boycott.